This is an adult podcast made for adults by adults. With Gummo's brutal reality and a deep rabbit hole discussion on body hygiene, this is the grossest episode yet, and probably the only small little bone we will ever throw to Scorsese fans. All this on Fake Film Fans.
Hey folks, welcome to Fake Film Fans. My name's Suede Best and I'm a fucking piece of garbage.
Hi, I'm Walter and I'm that little plastic bag that you use to keep all your pet insects in.
Yep, that's exactly. I'm just a fucking worthless asshole and you're a bag that is filled with insects.
Yep.
We're exactly. Here today. We're fucking gonna do a podcast, I guess.
Yeah. So before we start, I just want to say if you do want to support us, the best way to do it is just to give us some review or give us some ratings on wherever you listen to it.
I feel like that's a little presumptuous. Don't you say that? Well, don't you feel a little presumptuous, huh?
Not really, honestly.
You think they have to love the podcast? Tell them why they should love the podcast.
Why they should love the podcast. Well, if this podcast doesn't blow up, Suede will keep moaning about how poor he is and how he's such a useless human being.
That's true.
Make this podcast big.
That's true. I need it. I need to get out of this city, man. Come on. Give me the cash. I need the cash. Come on.
Yeah, we're trying something new. So give me the cheddar. We're going to try whining about
it. Give me the cheddar.
Help us.
Help us. I need the cheese. Oh, I need
Wait,
it.
Why is cheese part of money?
I don't know.
If you have a lot of money, can you get a lot of cheese?
I think it's because mice eat money and they also eat cheese.
Wait, mice eat money?
Probably.
No wonder cities have so much mice. There's so much money in the
cities.
It's
true. There's so much money in the cities. That's why in these rural areas, there's no mice.
I just realized one of the best new Marvel films or Marvel comics that should be invented is the Mice Man.
Mice Man?
And he just fights capitalism in the city.
And he fights capitalism, okay.
All his villains are going to be like capitalist people. So like he fights the grocery store owner. All of them have money as weapons, and his ability is just to eat them all.
But Walter, what do we do about the fact that we're slowly reaching a cashless society? The only reason I carry around cash is so I can give it to the homeless people downtown. I use my debit card for everything else. What is Mouse Man going to do? What is Mice Man going to do against Captain Credit Card?
Well, that's when he needs to upgrade his superpowers. That can be episode 100
that's
or something.
That's his training arc. Okay.
He probably has to go to China, like, you know, how all the Marvel heroes go to China and get their, like, Zen Buddhism from Tibet.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then because China has been so fast on making cashless society.
That's where he learns
yeah,
it.
Yeah. There's probably going to be some girl there.
Yeah. So he, like, goes and he, like, studies with his mice. And there's, like, an old woman who's, like, she's trained mice to psychically devour people's social capital in mainland China. And he learns from her
yeah,
how to do
exactly.
It. Okay, I'm down. Who would you star in this movie?
Well, I would want to be woke, so I would star in mice.
You know what? Well, I think give this podcast 5 stars and we'll make this movie. We need the cheese. This is our new bucket list. We're going to make a movie about anti-capitalist mice. When I want to get out of this town. I want to go live in the big city. I want to go live in California.
California,
baby.
California dreaming.
California.
I have many weeds in my pocket.
I have infinite kisses on my lips, baby. Kiss me on the phone.
California dreaming.
California dreaming. Kiss me on the phone. So we finished last episode with Tori. We'd had a lot of dick conversation. Then like 2 days later, out of the blue, you're like, I know what the next opening's going to be. We're going to talk about personal hygiene. So you know what? I don't know where we're going to go with this. I don't know what part of personal hygiene. I'm hoping we talk about dicks less this episode. What got you sparked about hygiene?
Yeah, well, so because of last episode, the first thing I actually wanted to talk about was lengths. The reason why is because there was something about my insecure masculinity that made us ended up talking about all those experiences of whatever I was doing. And I thought body hygiene is kind of on the same wavelength of very vulnerable bodies.
It's true.
That, like, people don't really talk about.
Or, like, if someone is, like, not practicing body hygiene in the way that others think it's appropriate, it's always, like, pulling someone aside and being like, oh my god, let me, I'm sorry, I don't want to say this, but, like, you know, you're stinky, you're a stink boy. It's taboo, is what it is. The stink conversation.
But everyone has one of those bad habits when they grow up. I feel like it has to be a common norm for a majority of people for them to remember a parent having one of their bad habits constantly being hammered and being told to stop. I'll start. I'm a nail biter.
Okay, me too.
And you know those Twitter identity lines?
Okay.
Honestly, I probably should put nail biter. I've always nail bited my entire life. I've always loved nail biting. I do it when I'm nervous, of course, but I do it when I'm casual, when I'm bored, and I like the feeling of the sharp nail. I like digging into my skin. I will admit, I haven't been biting my nails so much because of the COVID, and when you wear a mask, it's kind of hard to bite your nails. Yeah. You have to, like, either take off your mask and bite them, which kind of defeats the purpose. My current bad hot body hygienes aren't the most grossest right now, but maybe when COVID ends, I'll go back to nail biting.
I don't think nail biting's all that gross.
It's still a habit that people try to get you to stop.
Yeah, but I've never understood why. My biggest, I'm a wicked nail biter, and it's almost always to do with nerves. I'm just like, I'm obsessively thinking about something, and I'll chew my thumbs until they start to bleed. But, like, you know, there's worse things to do. I think the only really gross thing about nail biting is you need to do something with the nails.
Well, I mean, if you think of hands being one of the most dirtiest parts of the human body, which is a very factual thing because we do so much with our hands, then of course it's, like, gross. But I'm actually surprised that you instantly reacted like that, because why do you have a personal ranking of bad body habits in your brain?
No, but, like, if you're scratching your, like, ass cheeks or, like, your asshole or whatever, like, your cheeks are fine. It's a little, like, gauche. It's a little, like, low class, I guess, is how someone could describe it. But your asshole has, like, germs, and it's not germs, it's got bacteria, so there's a smell, right? If you scratch your ass cheek and then shake my hand, I'm gonna be a little embarrassed for you. But if you scratch your asshole, I'm gonna pull my hand, it's gonna smell like fucking asshole. So that's like worse, right? In the same way that, like, if you like I have a really bad habit of, like, pulling on my nose. If nothing comes out of my nose, it's just, like, a weird thing I do. But if I'm, like, stuffy and, like, snot comes out, then it's gross in a different way, because I've, like, touched my hand onto this thing that's leaked into someone else, right? Body habits get worse when you can leave a residue on another person.
I think this just shows that, first of all, you don't have a bidet and you don't wash your asshole clean it off.
My asshole is fucking fine, Walt. I will have you know. My asshole's awesome. Okay, my asshole's great.
And secondly, you want everyone to be wearing a clown nose in public.
Yeah, but that's because I'm attracted to clowns.
That's true, too. You're right. That's like a two birds, one stone thing.
I don't know. There's something about the human body that's like, you know, or like, here's another option. In the winter, when you're not sweaty, like, scratching your armpit, not that big a deal. If you've been, like, working out and you're super sweaty and you, like, scratch your armpit and then you go to shake someone's hand and you got, like, armpit funk on your hand, like, that's gross. It's about a transference that's gross. You know, because, like, for instance, like, when I get out straight out of the shower, you know, you could, like, eat food off my body anywhere in my body. It'd be fine because I'm clean. I'm a clean boy. I'm daddy's clean boy. You know, after, like, a fucking hard day at work, so I'm a sweat boy. Been doing a sweat day. I mean, I probably smell like cigarettes. You know, I've, like, handled dirty money all day.
I mean, I just think that there are so many gross things humans do that is acceptable. And then, like, suddenly we have these ideas that some parts of our body are grosser. Like, are you sure your snot and your asshole is grosser than, like, what you touch, as you said, with your dirty money and all this stuff? Probably isn't true, right? Technically, is your body has a self-cleansing mechanism so that the innards of your body are probably actually cleaner than literally everything you touch.
But there's a change of texture, right? Like, so the difference between, like, a dry handshake and a wet handshake is ominous. Like, why the fuck is your hand wet? Even if you just dipped your hand in water, if there is going to be a sensory experience because I've interacted with you in some way, shape, or form, and it is different than how it would normally be because of something that has come out of you, that's, like, a deeply unpleasant experience.
No, I understand that, as in, like, today's society views it as an unpleasant experience. I might be calling society out.
All right, next time I see you, I'm going to fucking, like, not shower for 3 days. I'm just going to fucking run my hand up and down my armpit and under my scrotum, and I'm just going to just put it directly in your face. And then I'm going to take my other hand that I've washed, and I'm going to put it in your face again. I'm going to say, which one did you like more, Walt? Which one was more unpleasant?
Okay, both of them would suck. Also, I've dealt with crusties before.
Do you mean like crust punks?
Yeah.
They are foul.
Okay. I dealt with crusties before. And dude, we do all the stuff. I mean, I don't have sex, so I'm not talking about that. But like, you know, we hug, we share sandwiches. They might not even brush your teeth for 5 days. And honestly, I don't even know if that's like worse than the daily shit we do. That
Nah, dude. I'm sorry, bro. I can't go there with you. I can't go brush your teeth.
You have toxic cleanliness.
No. Because like, I don't wear deodorant. I just wash my armpits. And so sometimes I'm a little sweaty, you know, and I don't like wash my feet every day. You know, like I take a shower every day. I have to, or like I have to take a shower every day, or the voices will get me because of all the bad energy, the bad voices in my brain. There's just like a basic minimum that you need to be able to do. I don't know, for me to be willing to interact with you, you just have to like just brush your teeth. And, you know, which is not to say that I won't. I mean, I've interacted with plenty of people who don't, I'd think, have poor hygiene, and I'm friends with plenty of them. I just, like, personally, I can't do that.
No, I think there's a bit of an assumption when it comes to bad hygiene.
What assumption of what?
That you have to buy into the assumption that like all bad hygiene is worse than the normal hygiene that people have.
When there's a total spectrum, right? You skip brushing teeth one day, you'll probably be okay. If you don't ever brush your teeth, you'll get gum disease and your teeth will fall out. I'm not saying everyone needs to like cover themselves in rubbing alcohol. And I feel similarly about fragrances people wear. I feel like when you walk into a space, you shouldn't change the smell of that space. Your presence shouldn't be announced by the way you smell, right? So like with people who smoke a lot too, like if you don't wash the clothes that you wear, if you are someone who smokes a lot of cigarettes or marijuana, it like clings to your clothes and it's really foul. And the same thing with people who don't brush their teeth a lot. If you smoke a lot, the smell of stale tobacco will get caught in the plaque. I worked with someone once who was like that, who had the worst breath, and it was because they didn't brush their teeth well and they smoked all the time. And it was like, it was hard to talk to them because of their breath. So I think in the same way that like when you walk into a room, you don't start screaming. Your sensory input, the amount of like sensory energy you put out into the air when you enter into a space, shouldn't slam against other people so hard. Do you get what I'm saying?
I do. I just don't know if I agree with it.
Well, I was working at the theater once. This was at the movie theater, and there's this couple, and they just smelled like someone took shit in an ashtray. It was the foulest shit I've ever smelled. It was disgusting. And, you know, I did what I needed to do. I did them, and they left, right? And literally the next customer were these gym bros, these, like, frat bros, and they were wearing the most strong, acrid cologne. And it was just, like, flip-flopping. It went from, like, you know, like, musty, sweaty, stale cigarette smoke to, like, acrid, sharp Axe body spray. And I finished the transaction. I did the transaction for both of these groups of people. And then I went outside, and I vomited. I literally went behind a theater, and I just, like, puked everything I'd consumed that day. Because it was just, it was so rough. And it wasn't like one smell was worse than the other. It was that you're, like, assaulting the zone. There's just too much. Don't, you know, I wouldn't stick my hands in your face. Don't get your smell in mine.
Yeah, you have a different personal smell space.
Exactly! I don't think that's too crazy. I think that's a good idea, maybe.
This got super socially serious, which I wasn't thinking about initially when I brought up this topic. I kind of just wanted us to be vulnerable. So right now, the only real bad habit I really have is picking my chin hairs. I'm not a very facial hair person, so I just grow stubbles. And I like picking the stubbles and pulling them out really hard, and I like feeling that pain.
Yeah.
I feel like this can be traced to nail biting, because when you bite your nails a lot, any nail biter knows, you're not just biting your nails, you're biting your skin, and you will bleed. And sometimes that bleeding feels a little good.
Oh, see, I hate it. I hate it. My fingers are always raw. My thumbs are always just like torn to shreds, and it's because I'm just so fucking neurotic. So I think I have two gross habits. One of course is the fingernail biting, but I also do that to my toenails. I don't do this like in public spaces. if I'm like sitting watching TV and I notice my toenails are long, I will bite them to keep them clean, to keep them short, instead of if I don't feel like going to get tweezers. Pretty disgusting. But, you know, sometimes, you know, it's just like, oh shit, my toenails are long. Especially if you're like not being aware and you like accidentally like scratch your like leg with your toe and it's like, oh, that was long. So I try to keep my toenails pretty trimmed. My other one, and this is, I spit a lot. I spit a ton. And it's because I am often smoking a cigarette. I don't even spit like through my lips. I have like a kind of a fucked up tooth that like sticks out kind of pointy, and I jettison the spit from in between those teeth, just like
tsh. Yeah, but what happens if you spit without jettisoning it? It would feel wrong, right?
It would feel wrong.
Yeah, that's the fucking shit I'm talking about, baby.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
No, I actually bit my toenails too, and I can't even remember the last time I did it. I think I was like shamed for it once as a college student.
Oh,
like,
my mom and dad shame me for it all the time if they see me doing it. They're like, that's disgusting. And I'm like, fuck off, mom. Fuck off, dad.
Well, I used to bite my toenails because you would run out of fingernails and then you would get bored and then you would go to the next thing. I remember during that time, this is the worst thing that happened. My parents saw me biting my toenails once, my dad actually. And he said, that's so gross. What's the next thing you're going to do? Bite your ass skin? And I swear to God, for about 6 months, I started picking at my ass cheeks and ripping the skin off and eating them. I remember the first time it happened.
What the fuck?
What?
What the fuck, Walt?
I literally had a mental note in my head that was like, my dad said that. But that could never happen.
How are you picking your
skin? And like, I tried it.
Wait, well, how? What are you I mean, like, what? How are you pulling chunks of flesh off of the cheeks of your ass? What were you doing?
I don't know. Look, this is like a really long time. So I'm trying to figure out how it started and exactly what the habit was. Because it wasn't even that long. It didn't even last a year.
That's
Yeah, it's pretty fucked up, huh?
I mean, it's just bizarre. I mean, it's just like, I'm just like trying to think of like the physically how to do it, right? Like, I mean, because like I've had skin tags that I've like cut off, but I use scissors. I used a scissor, bud. I used fucking scissors to cut that shit off. I didn't fucking just like make a crab claw, some sort of devious crab claw, and just pull chunks of my skin off. That's it's not just disgusting. It's terrifying.
It's terrifying. It's like I'm self-cataboring myself. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it is crazy. Let's put it this way. It is crazy, but I don't think it's as crazy as someone like fucking eating their own body, like a Hisayu Sato film where she cuts her vagina off and actually eats it. But basically,
well, now that's gonna have to be in the podcast, whatever that was.
You haven't seen those films?
No.
There's this director called Hisayu Sato from Japan. He's really famous for making like the absolutely dumbest gore porn, and they're like really, really fun. One of them, like, there's like three girls who go really addicted to pain, and one of the girls is so addicted to pain she cuts off her vagina lips and eats them.
Yeah, see, I don't think I'd like that very much.
You would though. It's so cheesy and campy. It's not even like very gross.
Okay, then I probably actually so I get that, because I really like Takeshi Miike and what's the other guy, whoever did Samurai Rogue Geisha. But sometimes that stuff, so like, because I didn't like Visitor Q, which Takeshi Miike directed, and I was like, because it's a little too serious.
He doesn't make serious actually he might some of his films might be a little on the serious side, but that Carnivore Pain Addiction one is not fucking serious at all. But yeah, it's more that I think anytime you scratch your skin,
are you talking about dead skin?
Yeah, so you get dead skin, so you eat the dead skin.
This episode is the grossest episode so far.
But that's the good shit, baby. Okay. That's the good shit.
Give us 5 stars if you want to hear Walter fucking talk about his own skin flakes, because I need the cheddar. Give me the cheese so I don't have to listen to Walter talk about his goddamn skin. You know what? Give us 5 stars and write, Walter, never talk about your skin flakes again. Do that for me, maybe.
No, but so when you start scratching the exact same place all the fucking time, you start getting deeper and it stops skin flakes. It becomes more
intense. Dude, that's like so brutal, man. That's like some, what is his name? Shintaro Kago shit, man. I mean, that's like rough.
Yeah, but dude, you're kids, dude. As a kid, you fucking go crazy.
I don't know, man. I did some fucked up shit when I was little, but not a whole lot of it dealt with self-mutilation. But I was really skinny when I was a kid.
That's really surprising because you've actually changed a lot. Now you're such a cool muscle Chad guy.
No, I would get cold. I would get super cold because they would make us take naps. The warmest place is between your thighs. So I would be in nap time and I would just put my hands in between my thighs and my little fucking and prepubescent ball sack to try and keep warm. This is like when I was in like first grade, and they'd be like, it's nap time, and they would always come over and be like, hands out your pants, Suede. And I was just like, okay. But I'd be like shivering, I'd be like freezing, I'm just like so cold.
I like how they call it hands out of your pants when they really mean take your hands out of your dick, Suede.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it's like...
Well, speaking of the kid habits, though, I was wondering if we would share some of our craziest stories that our parents tried to do to make us stop doing these bad habits.
I don't know. I was like an anxious kid. I'm an anxious adult. So like a lot of this stuff just got like beaten out of me by my own neurotic behavior.
Well, obviously my parents always wanted me to stop. So I did the normal stuff, like going to school with tape on my nails. That was really sad and embarrassing. And my parents tried to put like glue on my fingers so I couldn't bite through the glue. The reason why they started putting glue is because I would just bite through the tape. Through the tape and get to my nails anyways. But what my parents actually really like to do is they would like to tell me stories. So one of my favorite stories they told me was apparently there was this kid in Taiwan who was so addicted to biting his nails that he bit to the fucking bone so that he would be biting his bone in the middle of his finger. And they would use that as a scare tactic as a kid when I was biting my nails.
Well, dude, but that's like very old school. I mean, like my grandmother had this German kids book that she was like from hers when she was really little. It was like a German fairy tale book. And there was a character in it. I can't remember his name, but if you sucked your thumb, he would come and he would just fucking cut your thumb off. He had these giant shears and it'd be like, if you sleep and suck your thumb, he'll cut your fingers off. And it's like, okay, cool. I guess I'm like never going to put my fingers in my mouth because there's a devious German man in Lederhosen who's going to come fucking cut my fingers off. You know, it makes sense that we're, this is a gross intro, because I watched, I think one of the grossest movies I've seen in a long time, Gummo, a 1997 movie directed by a person whose name I can't remember. Walter?
Harmony Korine, I think his name.
Exactly, that person. I watched a little bit of it for last podcast, and I decided that there was too much to talk about in Gummo to try and frame it through the lens of whether or not
this is actually what happened. You talked a little bit about it, but because I knew you were going to talk about it in the next podcast, I couldn't.
He edited it. See, he edits everything. All the times I sit here like just crying because Walter is so mean to me, I say, Walter, please stop yelling at me. And he cuts it all out. So Gummo is, I think, one of these movies that where you and I's taste intersects a little bit, because plot is really not central. In fact, the director, Harmony, got rid of traditional three-act structure in part to deal with some of the like moral stuff that's going on, the questions on morality. And it's really easy to like set up moral values in a traditional three-act structure, right? Like someone does something, there's chaos because of what that person has done, and at the end you see the answer to what's been done, and it creates a moral response. And so sort of going away from a 3X structure and making it more collage-like makes for this like really weird experience that makes plot completely secondary. Because plot's not really very central to the film, there's other stuff that you end up latching on. And some of the things you latch onto are heightened by the fact that there's almost no actors, professional actors in the film. Everyone who's hired is like a non-actor, right?
Except Chloe.
Yes, that's true. And so it makes for this like really uncomfortable, authentic experience. The basic premise is basically just a group of adolescents in this town in Ohio that has been like totally fucked over by a tornado. And it's just like kids making it through the day. It's not a movie for everyone. There's a lot of scenes of cats being killed. Of course, they're fake. It's not, the cats are fine. It's not real cats being killed. But there's a lot of violence against animals in this movie. In part because two of the main characters, Tumbler and Solomon, make money by bringing dead cats to a butcher. He goes and they kill dead cats and they bring him to a butcher for some reason. So it's, I don't know, and I have pet cats, so I didn't love those scenes, but it's kind of rough. But like, I live in a pretty okay neighborhood.
Oh, this isn't a good representation of your white trash neighborhood?
So here's what I was going to say, is that, like, no, but you drive 10 minutes and you're there. I mean, like, there's sections where you just see all these, like, scrawny white kids, just, like, with, like, the beginnings of a mustache, like, sitting around, like, a porch. It's, like, slowly falling down. And, like, there are kids who are, like, 15, 16, who are, like, chain smoking. And there's, like, beer cans littered all over the place. And I think one of the things I really liked about Gummo, and part of what makes it hard to watch, is that it's an authentic expression of poverty in most sections. It doesn't dramatize it. And it doesn't romanticize it. There's all these sections inside the house with wood paneled walls and like secondhand furniture. And there's literally a house down my street I used to go to that was set up the exact same way. And I just like just watching it. Like I was lucky. I didn't grow up like that. But I have been around that. It was like refreshing and uncomfortable to see it without like, you know, like, oh, there's the poor girl who like wants to be an artist who's like, you know, has to, you know, go to work as a waitress, or like, you know, here's the cool tough kid who like smokes cigarettes and lives in a garbage dump, right? It's just like actually just like poor scrawny looking kids that you could walk down the street and I'd interact with. So there's something like really engaging about that that I haven't experienced in a really long time. Something like super authentic about the presentation of poverty that, you know, resonates with me as someone who's like really lucky to have a home and have a place to stay and have a job that pays me pretty okay. But watching it, you don't feel like a bad person because of how, you know, it's also really authentic with the way the kids are treated, right? There's not this, you know, the innocence of children. Like, the children are all just like kind of vaguely like they're normal. The two main characters are pretty terrible because they go around killing cats, but like other than that, they're just like normal kids. Like, they huff glue and stuff. I don't know, there's something so unfiltered but also incredibly normal about everything, right? There's something so authentic about everything that happens on the screen that it really kind of like spoke to me in a lot of ways. That sounds like super pretentious, but it's true. Like, you know, it felt like I could walk into the movie and take a left and I'd be at the bookstore.
I wonder if you agree with this, because for a film that's considered so transgressive, it's surprisingly quiet.
It's super quiet.
Yeah, and I kind of feel that, like, I don't want to romanticize any of these characters, but because of the quietness, it's like none of them are exaggerated. They're evils, or not evils.
They're morals. Like, none of the characters are caricatures of each other as far as like their moral values go, right? Like, if they feel very, they feel authentic. I'm gonna keep using that word, but it's true. They feel like genuine.
I get scared of using that word because obviously I'm very removed from that.
Well,
stuff.
I'll tell you, there's a scene where the three girls who are all, and you, they don't talk about the age, but they're probably minors. The cat's missing. It's been killed by the two main boys. And they're just looking for their cat, and this dude comes up and invites them. He's like, "Oh, I've seen the cat," and he goes into their car. And as he's looking, he like kind of tries to like he tries to grab one of the girls under her skirt, and they like get angry and they flip out and they start like hitting him, and they get out of the car and they're like, "Hey, fuck you, man!" And he's like driving away. He's like, "You're just whores. You're whores." And he drives
away.
Yeah,
but the greatest thing about that scene too, in particular, is when he calls them whores. His tone is so dead.
You know?
It's not like "You're just whores," like how you would normally recognize it in an argument, but it was like a very dead tone.
Well, and here's what I'll tell you. I think some of it is people not wanting to interact with reality, because when they got out of their car and were in that little shitty strip mall area, it looked exactly like there. You get off the highway, you get off 81, and you take a right in sort of my neck of the woods, and you're just right there. There's an Asian grocery store, there's a Papa John's, there's a hairstylist place, and there's a few different like storage facilities. And it just gets right back on the highway. And it was literally like I was over there at the Asian market. I was getting some stuff, and I could imagine myself walking out of that and seeing these three girls like yelling as the car sped away. And I think actually what's really disturbing about this movie, and why I think it's not actually that disturbing with the exception of a lot of the violence, I think why it makes people disturbed is because they aren't willing to grapple with the fact that this movie is in their backyard. You know, what's really despicable about the experience is everyone wants to, like, dramatize it into this, like, oh my god, it's so disgusting. And there are some moments that are, like, very clearly dramatized. Like, there's a section where the younger kid, Solomon, is, like, dancing in a basement, and the basement is, like, filled with trash, and he's like dancing in front of a mirror. Or he's not dancing, he's working out, and his mom's dancing. And like that starts to like get into sort of like Ralph Ellison, Kafka, kind of like dreamy, nightmare-y kind of place that doesn't feel like super real. And it's good, it's a good scene, but it doesn't feel like quite like a like the rest of the movie. But when you cut back to it, it's like, oh no, this is just like driving through, it's Southeast in my neck. This is like driving through Southeast. It's just like it's just poor people being poor and struggling, and not struggling and like, oh man, she works two jobs to take care of her kids. It's like struggling like, oh man, there's a kid who's like 17 who's like, dad smokes crack and he still goes to school. You know, like that's like, it's commonplace, it's real, and it's only disturbing if you're hiding from your everyday life, if you're hiding from what's really going on. I would be careful watching this movie. It's kind of a rough one, it's kind of upsetting. So if you're not into, you know, like movies that have conversations on like, you know, sexual abuse, violence against animals, poverty, homophobia, drug abuse, I think it's worth watching if you're willing to stomach it, if you're willing to deal with some of the uglier elements. But it's definitely one that you're going to want to like smoke a cigarette after, or do whatever it is that makes you feel better, right? Like watch an episode of SpongeBob or pet your cat or whatever.
SpongeBob is trash.
Okay, oh man, I was texting this girl who I like think is cute. I was like, hey, you want to hang out and get a cup of coffee? And she was like, oh yeah, see you there, SpongeBob. And I was like, I'm gonna fucking be so good at this. So I found a sexy picture of SpongeBob, like SpongeBob with like muscles, like posing kind of like risque, and texted it as a response to that. And she just gave me the laughing emoji as a response, and I was like, man, sweet, you fucked this up, bro. You should have just said you should not have done that. You fucked that one up. You fucked that one up right good.
You needed SpongeBob having sex with Patrick. That's what you needed. You didn't go far enough.
I should have pushed further. I should have done a picture of like SpongeBob like
fisting. Or SpongeBob receiving in all of its spongy holes.
I think this is a good first date movie. If your date cannot be like, oh yeah, I know that place, then you're like, fuck you, we're not going on a date. Like this is the litmus test of like, is this person that I'm trying to invest in understand reality the same way?
Gotcha. Basically, if they know this place, then you're like, okay, you recognize there's huge fucked up parts of society.
Yeah, you've seen past like going to like a nice bar and like drinking shots. You know, you're like, oh no, I went to pick up a friend and I drove through this neighborhood and I saw six kids just like this. Like, if you can't put yourself, you'd have to be in a pretty nice place in the world to like not at least know of this being reality in a lot of ways. And there's like some super fucked stuff that happens that's like outside of reality. But those almost feel less interesting to me than the pseudo-documentary elements.
Here's my question. You use the term gross, and I remember when I watched it, I didn't really find anything technically gross, because we were talking about body habits, body That's hygiene. True. I don't entirely get that choice of words, because I get transgressive, I get disturbing, I get fucked up or whatever. And even if I don't agree with them, I understand what people are saying. Gross, when people call this movie gross, I'm like, what are you talking about?
So the kids are all really sweaty and dirty. And there's nothing sexual about the whole film. Even when there's like sexy stuff trying to happen, it is the least sexual experience. It's just like everything is like kind of like cluttery and like dirty. Like even like there's a section where Samuel is bathing and he's just like rubbing soap into a cracked wall. Everything is so textured with reality, textured with like dirt. There's another section where Samuel and Tumblr are they're huffing glue and like placed with a bunch of ruined cars, a car wrecked facility, I don't know the word for it, and like they're sweating in the sun and like their eyes are all like beady because they're all fucked up on paint fumes or glue fumes. And it's so visceral, right? Or, you know, there's a scene where they go to see a prostitute who's a handicapped girl, and that's like really a rough moment. It's not just rough because of the context. Like, everything in the house is, like, really kind of dirty. Or not dirty, but, like, cluttered and, like, claustrophobic. And then you just go into, like, this really nice, pristine room. So there will be times where, like, you'll have a switch, a cut, that will go from something, like, really, really unclean to something that's, like, super clean. Like, there's another scene where it's just, like, a bunch of people partying. And, like, the floor is just, like, so schmutzy, so dirty. And, like, the walls are, like, yellowing with cigarette smoke. and like everyone is shirtless and like covered in like, you know, like sweat. There's just no sheen. I think that's kind of what makes the movie gross. There's no, because we talked a little bit about dirty stuff in the Hong Kong movie Wisdom Tooth. There are sections in that movie that aren't gross, right? Like when the cops are doing their cop things where everyone looks like clean. There's not a section in this movie where like people don't look like they've been outside. It just, the whole movie feels unwashed. And I think some people find a lot of the violence against animals to be pretty gross, because it's very rare that it's like the animals are always wet and sopping, you know, like the actual act is gross. It's not just like the act itself that's gross, but it's like the sensual elements of the act that are like really gross.
I think it's, and not crazy, but it is definitely something to note that this film was made in the 90s, and you feel like parts of this film literally happening still, and it just shows how little things have changed.
Yeah, no, it's true. Like, the only difference now is that, like, there's a guy who comes into my store who asked to use my phone because he's calling his mom. He sleeps in one of the public bathrooms at a park, but he spends his time downtown, and he always comes and borrows, you know, asks me to borrow his phone, and he borrows my phone and he calls his mom and asks for help. It's usually just like some change so that he can like get a meal together. Sometimes she hits him up, sometimes she doesn't. And he's always covered in dirt. He's always covered in paint for some reason. He's always given himself a new facial something or other. It's like somewhere between a tattoo and actual scarification. The only difference between Gummo and the interaction I have when he comes into my store to borrow my telephone is that he's not a kid. And because it's not 1997 anymore, instead of letting him borrow the store phone, I unlock my phone and let him borrow my cell phone. I don't see a difference otherwise. I call him Tattoo Man because he's covered head to toe in tattoos. I don't know. He's an okay dude. He's never given me any hard time. He has a teddy bear he sleeps with when I see him sometimes sleeping downtown. He came in today. He wanted to borrow a pair of headphones because he uses a Walkman. He listens to something with his Walkman. See, Walter's face is just like so frozen because the idea of interacting with a homeless person is like so foreign to him. Like, you just ignore them in Walter's world. You just like don't even interact with them. You just walk straight past them.
You actually want to call me out.
All right. Yeah, I do. I don't know. But it's different because I live in Roanoke, so I know all these homeless people, right? I don't live in like New York or Hong Kong where there's just like shifting masses. So it's easier to personalize these people. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but it is a thing.
No, it's also, I'm not very comfortable making jokes when you put on this serious tone.
Yeah, sorry. Gummo like hit me pretty hard. Gummo was like, I don't know, it was like rough. It was rough to watch, and not rough because like, I don't know, it's rough. It's because it's what I deal with during the day too. It's rough because it's what I do at work, which I shouldn't have to because I work in a bookstore, you know. But the fucking no one else is gonna do anything about it. And it's not like I do much. Today I got a kid an Uber. After 2 years of being on the street, he finally was like, I'm willing to go home. And I was like, okay, I'll get you an Uber. And I fucking got him a place to stay. Hopefully he'll stay there. I don't fucking know. I've been in contact with his mom. I don't know. Hopefully he'll stay put. Hopefully he won't run away again. I say kid, he's like 20.
But still, like, dealing with it in your daily life and then immediately watching a movie afterwards is definitely an experience.
Yeah, it's rough. I don't know. I think one of the things I liked about Gummo versus this experience is that, like, Gummo's still really artistically put together. Like, the soundtrack is really fantastic. If you're fans of, like, death metal or doom metal, there's, like, a bunch of really good doom metal in here. Sleep is played. I Hate God is featured in the soundtrack. And sort of the cuts between, like, actual stuff happening, like, the characters interacting, and, like, recorded footage of the characters talking to a camera. You know, because if it was just a documentary of poverty, you'd be like, I can just go outside and watch this. But there's, like, just enough, like, artistry put in the weird stuff that happens to make it not quite just, like, an unblinking look into poverty, right? There's also, like, some weird, like, there's this kid with rabbit ears who shows up time and time again, just rabbit ears on a skateboard in his underwear. But there's, like, enough weird stuff to make it also a movie worth, like, kind of mucking around in that's not just, like, a reflection of the ugliness.
Personally, for me, I think the cast of the ensemble cast, or what you would call it, they're really good.
Oh, yeah.
And it's hard to use words like this because I agree. You don't want to romanticize any of this stuff. But I think there's something very interesting where a lot of the scenes are very short. It skips into many of these different characters all the time. So you sort of just get just enough humanity in each scene and it immediately skips. So you never fully get into that, like, aw, I pity, or aw, whatever.
Oh, no, yeah, exactly. You don't get a backstory.
But then there's like those little quirks. I remember when the main boys who has the more awkward face.
Or Solomon.
Yeah, when he's like flirting.
Yeah, he's with the girl with Down syndrome.
Yeah, and he's like really shy and like kind of winks at her and all this stuff. Those quirks are like, if they were not in Gumball, they're actually very cute scenes.
Yeah.
But because the scenes are so fast and so like jump into each other, as a viewer, you're never given that space to recognize any of it. You're immediately moving on to the next. Wait, sort
it of... actually reminded me of a lot of some of my favorite collections of short stories. The Lot is one. Catherine actually is. I told Catherine she should read it. But these, you know, like collections of short fiction or novels too that do this, that are less about plot and more about like giving a complete explanation of a space or a group of people. It's a little like
The Little Demons in My Brain by Suede Best.
Yeah, The Little Demons in My Brain by Suede Best. Smoker's Cough by Suede Best. One day you guys will read that.
Who are the fucking characters in Smoker's Cough? I know that all the demons in your head have names, but what the fuck is a character in a smoker cough? Like the bacteria? Like Ozzy and Drix?
Like Ozzy and Drix. Yeah. Well, you know what also reminded me a little bit of is both Germany Ground Zero. Germany Ground Zero or Germany Year Zero? Armor Corps does this similarly. Armor Corps by Fellini.
Wait, is it Germany Ground One?
Is it Germany Ground Five? How many numbers?
Germany Ground 5.2?
How many numbers can you list right now? List every number. How many numbers?
I think I can list one number, which is 3.
3, that's a good number. I would have picked 7.
So you can only list one number too?
No, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, that was all the numbers.
So, this is a little awkward because I kind of brought a film kind of about that partner Swede was talking about that would watch Gumball and be like, who are these people?
You're talking about the guy who you go to a bar with and you're like, yeah, man. And you're like talking about like, you know, how your granddad used to like, you know, like work in a factory for a living. He's like, yeah, I don't really, you know, I don't know. I like to go golfing. That's what you're talking about?
Yeah, I think, except they're going archery instead of golfing, right?
Okay.
I brought a Martin Scorsese film.
Boo!
Because we've been giving much shit to Martin Scorsese on this podcast. And the number two rule on this podcast is no
such thing as bad movies.
Bad movies. And we've been bragging it too much.
Being mean to Martin Scorsese.
And okay. In general, we've just been being too mean to movies. I always knew I would like this film because I'm a huge sucker for these films, but I just never watched it because watching a movie to make me like Scorsese wasn't a priority, so I just put it off. It's his adaptation of Edith Wharton's Age of Innocence, and I'm just a huge sucker for these type of bourgeois elitist period films, romance films, or whatever you want to call them, drama films. I love them so fucking much.
Do you like Edith Wharton? Have you read her work?
No, I have never read any Edith Wharton. Have you?
Wow, fucking loser.
You know the funniest thing about that too is initially I was thinking of bringing Sally Porter's adaptation of Virginia Woolf's Orlando, but because I haven't really read any Virginia Woolf and I know you would roast me for it like forever.
I would,
because
I actually like Virginia Woolf. I do like Virginia Woolf. I'll be honest, I've not read any Edith Wharton either. I don't like her name. It's similar to, I've not read any William Thackeray for that same reason. Just like, fucking get a better name. My boss swears by Edith Wharton though, so I'm gonna get to her eventually.
So you hate W's, so you hate me, Walter.
No, I like the name Walter. I actually, Walter, you'll feel good about this. If I ever have a boy, I'm gonna either name him Walter or Rashad. After two people I think my children should look up to.
I don't really know if I want your child to be named after me.
I would name my child after you, Walt. How do you feel about that? You feel good?
Okay, if you had a daughter, name them Walter.
No. If I have a daughter, I'm going to give her up for adoption.
Oh, okay. Give her to China. China loves daughters.
I will tell you, historically, I don't think that's accurate.
Well, anyways, finally I get to bring a film that represents me, right? Because I'm the most elitist person in the world.
Yeah, the elite bourgeoisie.
I really did really, really like this film, and I kind of didn't want to because I also felt this film was really a love letter to one of my favorite sort of romance period elitist dramas directors, Luchino Visconti. He's an Italian director. His most famous movie is The Leopard. But what I mean by that is that when I watch a Visconti film, there's like so much other things that people love. But for me, it's the costumes and props. they're so pretty, and they're so, like, I don't know, something about it gets me. It gets me in my heart. And honestly, in this film, The Age of Innocence, it almost feels like Scorsese is like me, more obsessed with the props and costumes and his, like, fucking furniture than the actual story and characters sometimes. Basically, what I mean is Scorsese has so many individual shots of his props. Food is a big one. There is so much fucking food.
You like what movies fucking... with food. You like movies with food.
I do. And that's why this movie is fucking shocking. Because the food in this movie looks fucking gross. I don't know what it is, but there's something different about the food in this film that just doesn't look right.
What period is this from? Well,
I'm not sure, but it has to be Edith Wharton's, either older than Edith Wharton, which is the 20s. They have these, like, sweets that look like fucking gelatin. Like, they look like macaroons. And they look so fucking gross. Do you know how I tease you guys for eating Clif Bars?
Yes.
They look like that type of shitty food. So apparently, throughout all society, people never ate real food anyways.
Okay, but yeah, so food in the 20s was kind of gross.
Yeah, it was, dude. There's this especially annoying one for me, which is the fish.
Oh, yeah, you feel very particular about fish.
Yeah, because they have a whole fish on the plate, but they share it by slicing up the fish and putting fish fillets on each plate. Why? Eat the whole fucking fish. Who gets to enjoy the fish head then if you just fucking take each fucking piece of fillet and then put it on a plate and then no one gets to eat the fish head?
My dad ordered whole fish once in South Louisiana somewhere. You know, he was eating the fish and the fish head was left. And my little brother's a little squeamish and he picked up the fish head. And he took a french fry off my little brother's plate and he made the fish head eat the french fry. And it, like, totally freaked out my little brother. My mom got super mad. Rocky completely lost his appetite. And my mom was, like, furious. She was like, "How could Billy, come on." So, so mad.
Yeah, if those were my parents, Rocky would have gotten in trouble. He probably would have got beat.
Are you saying your parents want you to play with the fish head?
No, you're not supposed to be a little loser who can't stand fish heads.
All right, well, there's only one thing to do. You gotta come fight my little brother.
Anyways, Chinese cuisine, we love our fish heads. So
well, there's a lot of good juice there, right?
Yeah, fat. It's really fat.
Yeah.
There's a lot of very specific type of fish fat that you don't get from anywhere. In fact, my dad loves fish head, and he's been feeling more brave about ordering it, despite no one in our family really wanting to eat it. So I've been eating more and more fish heads lately, and I have to admit, it isn't my favorite part. But seeing that someone doesn't enjoy a fish head in a dinner of 60 people is still annoying to me.
Well, so what is your favorite part of fish?
I don't know if I have a favorite part, honestly. I just like, I mean, how many parts of fish do you have? You have a fish head and fish body? What are the parts we have here?
I mean, I guess that's, I don't know. Like, what do you mean? I mean, because, like, so for instance, my favorite part of a pig is the ribs.
Okay, fish don't have ribs, though.
Okay, that's, okay, well, fish have ribs. That's, like, a thing. They're thin little fish bones.
Are you sure?
Yes, fish have ribs.
Those are ribs?
Yes.
So their ribs go up to their neck?
Yeah, probably. I don't know. I don't know. I know fish have ribs. I know fish have ribs, though, right? Fish have to have ribs.
What the fuck? I don't think fish have ribs.
Fish have ribs. They have a rib cage.
This is actually blowing my mind a little. I never thought about the parts of fish. No one eats fish ribs, though. That just doesn't fucking exist. I mean, I'm not eating fish bones, if that's what you're asking.
Well, I don't know. You know how, like, they have different cuts of tuna? You know, like, there's, like, different, like, from the body. Like, there's, like, I was wondering if there's, like, that for, like,
a whole fish?
Or, like, you know, I like the tail end the best. I like to chew on the tail at the end. I don't know.
I like chewing on the tail end if it's, like, deep fried. But if it's, like, fucking steamed, I'm not going to chew on the tail end.
I live in a landlocked city. So, like, I don't eat a lot of seafood. Because I just, like, I don't want to fuck with some, like, frozen fillet. Like, if I'm going to eat a fish, I want it to be, like, from something fresh. I don't want to just eat, like, a gross frozen fish. So I don't eat a lot of seafood because of that.
Okay, then my answer to your question is my favorite part of the fish is fish sticks.
I wish I could turn into digital energy and, like, transfer through the computer so I could strike you. I could strike you once, twice, a third strike.
I love fish sticks, though. Fish sticks are the best, dude. They're so underrated.
So are you telling me that if I said, well, do you want, like, a Szechuan, like a steamed red hot Szechuan whole fish? Or a plate of fish sticks? Which one would you say?
Okay, that's fair. I prefer the Szechuan fucking plate. But I prefer fish sticks over salmon fillet. I prefer fish sticks over sushi.
Really? You don't like sushi?
I think sushi's fine. I think it's a little, like, overrated. I think there's a lot of Japanese fetishizers who eat sushi. I'm calling you out, all you people! You guys are all Japanese fetishizers!
Japanese fetishizers! Japanese fetishizers! They should only eat... What should they eat instead of sushi?
They should eat they should be Chinese fetishizers. When they eat fish, they should sing the Chinese national anthem. That's the only proper way to eat fish.
I'll remember that. I'll remember that next time I'm at a Chinese restaurant.
Okay, dude, if you broke out singing super loudly and they were all from Hong Kong or like Taiwan, it would be so fucking funny.
All the fucking Chinese food restaurants in my neighborhood are run by Latinos. Like there's no Chinese restaurants in here. It's just like fucking dudes from like Latin America who are like, oh yeah, I figured out how to like fry chicken and cover it in like sweet spicy sauce and I call it Chinese food, and I'm like, hell yeah brother,
dude, that is good Chinese
food. That's also sure, not bro. True because there's some Asian people who run the Dragon China near the Kroger at my house that I love. I don't know what flavor of Asian they are, but they make some good ass American Chinese food.
What's your favorite American Chinese food?
Like dumplings. 9 times out of 10, it's either dumplings or it's like the dumplings are really good. I also have a weakness for Kung Pao chicken.
Kung Pao chicken. Yeah, you like those nuts. That's what.
Yeah, I love the peanuts. And then, I mean, General Tso's chicken is good too. Because it's literally just fried chicken covered in sweet and spicy sauce.
I always have to defend, American Chinese food to Chinese people. And they're so stupid. Chinese people are literally fucking stupid, okay, man. Uh-oh. They don't understand that this food is literally what they would like. But because they keep trying to describe it to the same as the food they eat, they just can't make the jump. But it's literally their taste buds. Their brains are just fried. That's it. Moving on to the next props. There's a lot of art. There's a lot of flowers. They're very pretty, but my brain is bad.
Like visual art, right? Like paintings and shit?
Paintings and shit, yeah. I'm very bad at visual paintings and appreciating that. So.
Which is weird because you like movies, which are visual.
Yeah, I can only understand visual art through like history. So like if someone talks about like art history, that's pretty interesting to me. But for some reason, me staring at a painting is not engaging. My brain hasn't figured out how to do it yet.
In high school, and I've kept through this, me and my friends, a lot of the ways when, because I've been, I go to gallery shows sometimes. You know, I've been to some gallery spaces because I hang out with the art crowd. And I'm always like so fucking out of my element, even though I like went to college and I have like an okay background in like art history and stuff like that. My thing was, is this a painting I would want in my bathroom or not? Like, is this a painting that I would put in front of the toilet that I can look at while I'm shitting? Is this a good painting? Is not important to me. Is this a painting I would want to put in my bathroom while I'm shitting? Because I think that would be my ideal painting, would be one that I can like help get the poop going.
So does that come from the criteria or does that just come from like instinct? Like this would make my poop better. Or is there like, you know, because of the brownness on the corner of the edges, that would make me remind me of my poop so my poop will slide out of my asshole a little easier.
Well, I think some of it's like how busy, like you wouldn't want a stressful painting in the bathroom. You would want like a calming painting. That's fair. But you also wouldn't want like a portrait, right? You wouldn't want like someone looking at you while you're pooping, unless I guess you did. Like for me, like kind of like an avant-garde kind of like pseudo landscape, I think would be my ideal bathroom painting, or something with a lot of detail but kind of abstract is another good bathroom painting, but not like so fine that it's like stressful to look at. Like you don't want it to be like bugs crawling across a canvas amount of detail.
Yeah, or like in those bug art museums where they actually just pin live bugs and call it art.
They're not live, Walt. I'm sorry to tell you this. They're dead. The bugs are dead.
Oh.
Yeah, because then you would like wipe your butt and you'd be thinking about how crunchy the bugs are. It'd be gross. But I think if you can contextualize, like, so for instance, because I don't really care about like the brushstrokes or whatever, but like I'll often like look at a painting and it's like, yeah, I'd hang that in my bedroom. Or like, yeah, this would be like a cool painting to have at like a party where you're like being able to contextualize the painting in the context of how it would be viewed, I think is usually how I think about art.
I might be regretting my entire life of how I've dealt with art now.
I'm kind of a Chad about paintings, actually.
I'm having a bit of a brain meltdown.
Dude, it's okay. You know what? Next time you come to Roanoke, we'll go to the art museum and we'll look at paintings.
Okay, yeah. That sounds fun.
We'll go on an art adventure. We'll go on an art journey.
I'm going on an art adventure.
Going on an art adventure, baby.
So my favorite thing in all these period dramas is costumes. There's nothing better than the dresses. They're always super flamboyant, super large. And in my brain, the reason why I like them, besides them being colorful and all this stuff, I think it's because the dresses look like blankets. And I feel okay. like they look so comfy. I know they're not because of corsets and all these other stuff and how heavy they are. But I try to think about, like, if these dresses were super normalized for, like, everyone, it would be like having a walking bed.
Yeah, I think it, I mean, that's like that's the advantage of a muumuu, right?
What's a muumuu?
It's just like a big, like, kind of formless dress that you, like, wear. It's like, usually, like, a dress you would sleep in.
What's a dress with form?
Like, one of those, like, dresses that, like, really hugs your body really tight.
Should I start wearing dresses to go to bed? Do you think that's, like, incredibly comfy?
I don't know. I only wear underwear to bed. I can't sleep in anything but just underwear. I remember you sleeping in just your sweatshirt and underwear, right?
Yeah, I mean, I went towards that direction of, like, wearing less and less. But that's because I want my body to feel the blanket more. But if my clothes itself is a fucking blanket, then I wouldn't need to take off all my clothes.
I mean, I think that is the idea of the pajama, right? I mean, that's why you have a sleep gown. Or a nightgown or something like that.
Wait, I don't think I've ever worn, like, real proper pajamas in my life.
I don't like having fabric touch my skin. Like, if my ideal dress is just underwear, or if it's cold, underwear and a shirt. So I can't go with you on this clothes adventure. But I will say that I have worn pajamas. Pajamas are nice.
Well, you could go on this clothes adventure with me because I want to give you a proposition.
Okay.
If I wear a super, 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 super huge dress like this, will you stick your head in my legs? Face, I mean, sorry.
To do what?
I don't know. I just feel like it would be fun to have, like, someone stick their face in my dress.
You mean like a lap pillow?
No, just like when you motorboat someone, I guess, but doing it in the dress instead.
I don't know how fucking... When was the last time you washed your dick and balls,
No,
Walter?
Not there. I mean, between my legs, like down, like inside the dress, like the big fluff stuff.
Oh, I mean, yeah, sure. Fucking sure, Walt. I'll jerk you off. Yeah.
It's not even supposed to be a sexual thing.
Okay. No. Did you ever, like, hide under when your parents were wearing a skirt and you were really little? Did you ever, like, try and hide under their dresses?
I don't actually know if I did it, but I do have, like, recollection of, like, stuff similar to that happening. But is that, like, some fucking Freudian Oedipus shit, or we good?
I don't know, man. I mean, like, I hope not. I sure as fuck hope not. Because I did it.
You did it.
I don't know. I was really good. I used to, like, play with my grandma's, like, elbow. I'd be like, it's so, like, when I was little, I was like, it's so floppy. And I would just, like, play with it.
And your grandma was just chill.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is floppy, grandson.
I mean, pretty much.
All right, so let's give Scorsese some of his credit.
Is it a good movie?
It's a fantastic fucking movie, but also it's because I like this fucking crap. But one of the very unique things about it is that the camera in this film is incredibly interesting. It moves like crazy, and it moves in a really round way. So it, like, swings. The tracking shots are super wide and round, and they go in circles. You really feel like the camera sort of dances a little. And I don't know, if I was to do it as a literary way, I would say that the camera was kind of like the bubble of this elitist world.
Okay.
The film also cross dissolves into, like, scenes super randomly. The three leads are amazing. Daniel Day-Lewis is the main guy. He's all right. He's sobbier this time, which is kind of nice. Winona Ryder, does she have a bad reputation as an actress?
If Winona Ryder's in this movie, I will watch it. I fucking love Winona Ryder. She was so good in Little Women. She's so good in Little Women. That movie makes me cry.
Oh, this is what people were shitting on. People were shitting on her role in Stranger Things, I think.
I mean, maybe. I don't know. I thought she was okay. I didn't much care for that movie, that TV show. It was fine. It was a good TV show, but it didn't quite do the things I needed it to do.
No worries. We can shit on that. I literally thought it was so boring, I couldn't even finish two episodes.
Wow, I thought we didn't hate movies. I thought rule number two, but is it
TV shows are not movies.
Okay.
TV shows are not movies.
Okay. Yeah, that's right. Fuck Stranger Things. No, I watched a good bit of Stranger Things. It was fine. It's just like, I don't know.
I don't know why I always thought she had a bad reputation, but, like, she literally, every single time I watch her, like, it's just so
she's
good.
Fucking,
like,
no, she's beautiful.
Yeah, she's very beautiful.
No, but she's fucking, I mean, like, are you kidding me? I would give my left nut. A wizard, a god wizard could come to me and is like, Suede, you could give up one of your testicles and also you never get to see your family again and you only get to live for 15 more years, but you get to spend 15 beautiful years with Winona Ryder. Circa fucking whenever she was in Little Women. And that could just be your life. And I'd be like, yeah, sold. Fucking do it. Yeah. Hell yeah. I would cut the nut off right there.
But the actress that really did surprise me is Michelle Pfeiffer. She's the main lead, really. Michelle Pfeiffer's like before my period, right? She's in the 90s. The first time I heard of her name was in one of my English textbooks about like celebrities and like what they look like. I had to connect the dots of Michelle Pfeiffer being blonde, and that was like how I learned the term blonde.
Was this like when you were like learning English or some shit?
Like in elementary school. And I remember like, because I recognize all the other actors because like Brad Pitt was there. But I remember like talking to my mom and dad and being like, who the heck is Michelle Pfeiffer? And they were like, she's terrible. She's boring. She has nothing. And I think this might be the first Michelle Pfeiffer film I've watched, or at least first one I actually, she's like a main lead. She was great. Fucking fantastic. She had these teary beady eyes that were like fucking awesome. It's like there's no like water coming out of your eyes, but your eyes are like watery looking.
Well, I'll just quick tell you, I don't think I've ever seen any Michelle Pfeiffer movies with the exception of the Batman movies she was in.
Was that good?
I mean, I don't remember her at all. All I remember is fucking Michael Keaton and goddamn Jack Nicholson being awesome.
Wait, are you sure you didn't mix one of them up as Michelle Pfeiffer?
Yes, I'm very sure. I'm the Batman aficionado. I'm the Batman boy. I'm the BB, the Batman okay. boy. The BBB.
I've gotten Jack Nicholson mixed up with a lot of people, so.
Name one person who you've gotten confused of.
I don't know. We'll move on. I fucked up. I give up. But yeah, the beady-eyed stuff is like basically why I'm a sucker for these bourgeois elitist movies, right?
You mean because misty eyes, right? Not beady eyes.
Okay, what's the difference between beady and misty then?
Beady eyes are like little eyes, like little rat eyes. Like beady eyes are like so for instance, the main boy from Gummo, Samuel, has beady eyes. He has beady little rat eyes. Misty eyes are when your eyes like get like getting ready to cry, but you're not crying.
Okay, she definitely has large eyes, but I disagree that beady should be used for small eyes.
Okay, dude. All right. Take it up with fucking Oxford. Take it up with the dictionary, I guess.
What are misty eyes? It's not like you have eye catharsis?
Eye cataracts. We need to do a separate podcast called Teach Walter English, where I just like talk about words. Words that you should probably know. Like catharsis and cataracts and misty-eyed.
Misty, catharsis-eyed Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yeah.
Is like a good example of why I'm a huge sucker for these elitist romance dramas. Yeah. These social dramas are all about fucking rigorous social rules that people can't break, even though they're elitist and privileged, but they don't break the social customs. So all their emotions are always so restrained. It's so fucking good. It gets my heart pumping, and it's so toxic and so stupid, but oh my god, I love that stuff.
Well, do you feel connected to that from your own experiences?
No, not at all.
Which is,
I don't really think so. Which is what?
I mean, it's surprising because you're like kind of a fancy boy. Like, you don't live a fancy life, but you like come from fancy community.
Yeah, but I think like for me, I do believe there are social customs that restrain me, but I'm not like, if there's love and a social custom, what do I pick? Oh, I have to pick the social custom, but the love is too strong. I've never felt that.
I see. You don't feel restricted in this.
Yeah, I don't feel restricted, or like how they allow social customs to be the end all be all and like let it ruin their fucking lives.
I gotcha.
And I really like it in movie form. I really love it in movie form. So talking about Visconti again, his film, The Leopard, has this very famous like 1 hour long ballroom
scene.
Wait, are
you saying leopard as in leopard? Like the cat? Like a leopard?
Dude, I always thought that film was called Leopard, but you're right, it is spelled leopard? Wait, how do you spell leopard? Wait, is this fucking film actually called The Leopard?
That's what it looks like.
I think it was because I thought it was an Italian film. I always gave it the extra O.
Oh my god, the leopard. Jesus Christ, dude.
Holy fuck. Now this movie is boring. I'm gonna fucking kick this out of my fucking favorite films now, because I only like this movie because of the name. Anyways, yeah, so there's this famous ballroom scene where it's like 45 minutes and people are dancing, and the two main lovers, like start dancing together. And the girl of the main lover in that story has an older sister who's like jealous. And for like 3-4 minutes, they just film this like huge, gigantic ballroom dancing scene that's like a ton of fucking people, maybe like at least 100 people in this one scene. But you notice the jealous sister just constantly giving glances at the main couple's dance. And it's just glance after glance after glance after glance. It's never fucking recognized verbally or anything. She's just a small little picture of that entire scene. But each glance she does is so noticeable. It's so good. It gets, it's,
well, there's so much weight, right? There's so much weight to her the act that she's looking. It's something so minuscule, but it manages to have so much weight.
Exactly. Because the that's a fucking fantastic point. Because you're allowing your social customs to restrain you, and they can only come out as minuscule gestures because of how much social baggage is preventing it from coming out. But once you remove the social baggage, the weight is just fucking gigantic. And that's how much these emotions get through. That no matter how much fucking social restraint you put in, there's always going to be those little things that somehow get across. And you're right, it's that juxtaposition between the weight of what's hidden and then how hard it is to keep that weight inside, even if the social customs are that fucking important, that it still reveals that little bit of gesture in the end. And I just love that shit, especially in cinema. So actually, the best example of what I was talking about, though, in The Age of Innocence, is that there's this one scene where Daniel Day-Lewis picks up Michelle Pfeiffer inside one of the carriages. So he takes her glove and like unbuttons it like super slowly. One button, two buttons, three buttons, four buttons. And then takes off her fucking glove and then leans down and just kisses her hand. Or actually, at first, they touch hands first. They don't even kiss hands first.
Well, it makes so much sense that you're into this, because like you are so into this like slow titillation, like, oh, it's like, oh, you know, like, I remember like watching you try to interact with people romantically, and there was just like so much like waiting and yearning and like give and take. And I just wanted to like scream, like, just like fucking fuck already. No one needs to watch this fucking, like, swamp speed, slow seduction.
Dude, I do. The only issue is if I do it myself, I can't fucking see it.
That's the
fucking problem. I need to film myself flirting with people. And then, like, right after the date, I'd be like, yo, give me a second, and then I can watch it.
You just fucking jerk it real right.
Yeah, and then I'll be finished, and then I'll be like, all right, you're good. You can leave now.
I flirted with you. I did a long flirt. I'm done now. So little housekeeping, little house cleaning. Catherine is going to be taking a break from the podcast because she has like real human being things to do. She has like, you know, she's like a person who has like activities instead of just me and Walter, who exist only to do this basically now. We're going to get her back though. She's gonna come back. We're gonna wait here. We're gonna keep her seat warm. We're gonna keep a nice little place by the fire. And when she comes back, we're gonna welcome her with a big hug and a bowl of soup, and we're gonna say welcome back.
And this is such a sad time, so you want to support us in these sad times, you should give us some reviews and ratings.
Rate us 5. We need the cheddar. We miss Catherine, and we need the cheddar. But while you're at it, like us on Twitter, maybe just give us a follow, like all our tweets. And then, of course, if you have any questions or comments, feel free to reach out to us via email at fakefilmfans@gmail.com. I feel like I say this every episode, but I feel like we learned a lot about each other. Walter learned that the movie is not the leopard, it's the leopard, which is cool. I was very somber and didn't make any jokes while talking about the movie I brought, which is great for a comedy podcast. And we miss Catherine. Alrighty, well, everyone, just be sure to remember,
if you're going to watch a movie, do it with the lights off.